Hey, Halton here. Listen, the call for presentations for FDIC 2023 is open. Go to FDIC.com. If you've got a 1 hour, 45 minute class or a 4 hour workshop, or if you're an ambitious hot instructor, now is the time to get your proposal in. Go to FDIC.com under conference, hit that tab. First tab down is call for presentations. This is Halton, and we'll see you at FDIC 2023.
Welcome back to Main Street Firefighting, a podcast by Fire Engineering. My name is Lex Shady, along with my partner Chris Tobin. Before we get started, we'd again like to thank Fire Engineering for hosting this, and you all for tuning in. This month, we're joined by Lieutenant Chris Cummings from Albany, New York Fire Department. Chris comes to us with experience in both an engine and a truck, and we appreciate him giving us his perspective on exposure fires. So thanks again, Chris, for coming on tonight and talking with us. Before we get started, can you give us a little background on your experience in the fire service, kind of where you came up, and tell us a little bit about your department?
Sure. So yeah, I work in Albany, New York, and I'm from the Capital Region here in New York. Grew up like 20 minutes outside of town. I have 10 years in the job here in Albany, and that was just yesterday, the 22nd, we had our 10 years. And I'm a lieutenant right now, and I'm assigned to an engine company. So I did most of my time as a fireman in a truck company in Ladder 3, and then got promoted about a year and a half ago and went to headquarters for a little bit, and now I'm on an engine.
Cool. So can you tell us a little bit about Albany Fire Department? So like, what's their response to a typical structure fire, manpower, tactics, that kind of stuff?
Sure. So there's 260 of us on paper, four platoons, which is kind of a Northeast thing. I know a lot of places don't have four shifts. We have eight engines, four trucks, three paramedic, like SUV things. We kind of do EMS, like it's emergency. We send the fire truck and then the little paramedic truck, and the ambulance is a third service. So we're in the 70s still with that. And we also have one heavy rescue that has somewhere between four and six guys every day based on the day. The other fire companies have four on paper, but realistically, everybody's at three.
Mm-hmm. So how many trucks do you get at like a residential working fire?
So every box, regardless of commercial or residential, gets three engines, two trucks, a medic unit, which they're firemen, and the rescue and a battalion chief.
Can you describe your building stock there in Albany?
Yeah, so it's a typical Northeast city, right? I mean, you guys had that cool map the other day where the average, like, showed the average building based on the state or the area, I think. Mm-hmm. And the average building here on that thing was 50 or 60 years old. And the average building we're going to a fire in the neighborhoods that have fires all the time, they're pushing 100 if they're not over 100. You know, everything from turn of the century, a lot of type 3s, a lot of type 5s. And at this point, they're just old and tired. You know, they got a million years of renovations. You know, it seems like every 30 years, somebody went through and gutted them, but they really didn't gut them. They just added their stuff on. So typical Northeast city.
Would you say that most of your residential buildings are those wood frame, or do you have a pretty good mix of brick too?
I bet you it's 70-30. We have a lot of 2.5-story wood frames with steep peak, like a 12-on-12 peak, and I don't know if you guys have been to Western New York, like the Buffalo, but that style wood frame, we have a ton of those. And then the other one being just your typical two-story flat, walk-up flat apartment.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, so you brought up that map. I know with St. Louis being Midwest, it's unique because it has very, very old building stock, and it always pops up on the list of, like, oldest, you know, existing buildings. That haven't either been essentially like knocked down or remodeled into something else, and it's always funny because Albany is way up there on that list. I think one year was number one for the oldest amount of existing building stock on average in the United States. You're basically in the legacy fire environment as much as you can possibly get anywhere in the country.
So, you want to try that one more time, guy? I'm pretty sure it's Albany, not Albany.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
Like I said,
Midwest. Midwest. From the Midwest, Albany.
Hey, so the only oddball thing we have, or Now, we're the state capital, right? So one, people think that means we have money. That's not true. Two, back in the mid-60s to mid-70s, they knocked down, it's like 100, I think it was like 110 acres downtown to build a massive state government complex. So that's kind of unique because there's a lot of, one, there's a lot of old pictures from them doing that, and you get to see how things were put together. And two, that's, so 100 plus acres of all type one commercial stuff, and but it's just so unique from how they built it. You know what I mean? One, it's the government, so they didn't have to follow their own rules. And two, it just, you know, there's a 42-story high rise in there, just a bunch of oddball stuff that, you know, we're a medium-sized city, so to have that is unique.
Right. It stands out from the rest of the city for sure.
Yeah, it's very much so. It doesn't fit in at all.
So as you've had your career in the fire service, what would you say, or I guess, what piqued your interest in building construction?
A couple things. One, so I got 10 years working here, but in all honesty, I grew up around the job. My dad was on the job next town up the river here from Albany. So my whole life was being around the fire service and going in to pick up his check with him and all that. So, you know, just one, reading magazines and books as a kid and just kind of figuring out that, hey, the same things keep popping up in all these magazines and books. It must be important. And two, hanging out with, especially like you guys, right? We're on the road all the time. We're always talking. You know, you guys are way into this, which it's like, all right, I want to be mildly as smart as my friends, so I better pay attention. And then three, it's where we work. You know what I mean? We're in these places all the time, even for medical calls, right? You got to, there's no reason not to pay attention. Burn them. You got to learn something. So.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I've picked up on, you know, from, like I said, from us traveling around. It's just, I think, in a way, you know, where we work in the older cities, you have to know. Like, I mean, we're not just drowned out in a copy and paste suburban environment, you know, with just the same strip mall and then cookie cutter houses, right? We have the super duper old stuff, but there's so much variance in there. You know, it's so much more important that we have to know. I mean, we can't just show up and nothing's essentially the same. You know, I mean, everything is somewhat of a surprise, no matter how much you try to keep it routine.
Right. I mean, especially, I mean, there's a handful of newer stuff, or like they are building a few buildings around town all the time, right?
Sure.
But the upside of that being, we have the ability to see, like, oh, they're putting this here. This is going to be weird. You know, these places that are 100 years old, we didn't get to see what they did to cheat it or that they had to do because of whatever. So now it's like, you're not going to figure it out until it's on fire. You know, that's
just
not going to
happen. Right, right. I mean, that's the thing is, yeah, those, I mean, there were additions on some of these buildings 100 years ago. The additions they put on in the 20s, you know, it's crazy. So, I mean, yeah, the buildings we pull up to are a jigsaw puzzle a lot of times. So yeah, I mean, it's just every building is just almost like a Da Vinci Code in a way. And we see that a lot in the fire behavior, right? And that all works in the overhaul and how our departments are similar because operate in an older environment. That's going to be projected in its truck work and its priorities. And we start to do things similarly by necessity in a way, not because we're trying to be like each other, but it's required. So,
right.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, it's like you're saying, out and about, I think everyone's has a general interest in building construction. And so you got 10 years on there, and I'm right there ahead of you just by a smidge. But, I mean, at some point in our career, we all have that moment where we're like, wow, I suck at this and I need to know it. So.
Absolutely. And especially now being a boss, it's one of those things like with the company I'm in, we have the luxury of being the only paramedic engine. So we're always going to have a junior crew. It's a newer officer. And then a couple of new firemen, newer paramedics, because nobody wants to ride the thing. which is good and bad, right? I got young guys who like to go out and train and spray water and play, and it's great. But I don't have the luxury of having a guy who's been doing a handful of fires and knows stuff. So we got to try to get ahead of it, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just not going to go well. You know, so, the whole goal is, you know, in the words of Sean Dunderman, don't embarrass us, right? That's the whole goal. Don't look like a pile of idiots.
You know? Sure.
So we're going to kind of focus this discussion today on exposure fires. You guys kind of hit on it in the discussion a little bit ago about how different these buildings are and the fire behavior plays into that. And the exposures and the protection and what exposure firefighting is kind of all plays a part of this. So before we get into that, was there ever a specific incident or building that made you realize you needed to take a deeper look into the tactics utilized in these buildings?
A little bit of both. Right? So like I said, growing up around this stuff and kind of growing up around a different era guys who now they're all retired and some of them are starting to die, that were around when everybody was having more fires. So that, just listen to them. And then specifically one fire that actually we came in when I was still a fireman in the truck, we came in, is we were leaving the guys who started the, you know, had the fire in the morning at like 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. But when we showed up, there were 9 buildings into it. And it was just like, yeah, pick one. Where do you want to go? Like they were, you know, this is 3 hours into it and there were nowhere near under control. Mm-hmm. And I remember at some point being up on the roof and looking down and it was most of the block, 3/4 of the block, because at some point the rest of the block had burned down and that's what stopped it on that end. But it was, the other end was the corner. It was like, what, you know, there's a lot going on here. You know what right. I mean? Like, I'm curious. I don't know what was going on when they pulled up, but like, I don't think it was 9. It might have been 3, but where, how did we get here? You know? And that's not a shot at those guys. Who was it? I have no idea what was going on when they got there initially, but it's just the, if this was us, you know, where do you start and how do we try to get ahead of it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, exposures are such a different thing because it's the, especially when you have an exposure that is somewhat involved on arrival. So say the main fire building's fully involved and then the exposure is on the two sides or partially. It's the one time where you know you're kind of in a sense ahead of the fire, right? You know the fire is coming. Like you know it's you're just basically you're trying to build a defensive line essentially from the interior and the fire's coming from the outside in, which is completely opposite of what we normally do, which is the fire is from the inside burning outward, right? So some different stuff there with exposures, and it's just a weird thing. Some of the craziest, hardest, weirdest moments in my career have been in exposure buildings when we knew the fire was coming, right? Like we knew it was, we had to hold this wall or hold this side of the building, you know, and then we still seemed to get beat by it somewhere, you know, or got ahead of us somewhere. And it was, yeah, well, you know, and then we're all, you know, we're off, you know, crowd surfing down the stairs because now it's in the attic. And it's like, how do we not see this coming? Like we were in this building to try to hold it before the fire was here, right, with us. So,
and, you know, and just going back to that thing, like I said, we came in relieving those guys. And, you know, at that point, the damage was done and we were just kind of rolling with it. But what got them there, I think, was the common cockloft, right? They were all wood frames with a common cockloft. And again, it's just the nature of how it goes. You're not going to get ahead of it. You know, if you pull up an arrival and it's 3, it's going to be, you know, at best it's going to be 3 or 4 when you leave, you know what I mean? And that was just, you know, that morning it was what it was. But exactly. And I don't know, not to jump too far ahead, I don't think I am, but just looking, you know, like you said, kind of the anticipation part. I think the big thing is the who's the guy from Camden there with the tattoos? Gabe, right? He had a lecture, it was like coordination benefits. Sure. And I think that's the whole thing, coordinating that effort of being able to get, you know, we're going to go in the exposure, but if we're going in as the truck, we better not be poking holes and giving it air until we have a line in place, right?
Sure,
and
right.
Sometimes, you know, we're a young job right now. You know, in 10 years, they've hired, you know, 170 guys, right? There are a lot of guys left. It's getting that someone to go, hold on, we can't, you know, go crazy yet because we're going to need water, and just getting that balance and that coordination down. And unfortunately, the reality is sometimes everybody learns the hard way, right? No matter what it is in life, you realize, well, we shouldn't have done that because now it's coming out everywhere.
Right. So, and you know, to a point, the difference, you just kind of reminded me, your exposure is up specifically in your area. You don't have a lot of gangways or separation in between buildings. St. Louis specifically had that after the great fire of 1849, to where most everything had to be brick and had to have a gangway. We don't have a lot of rows or homes in St. Louis anymore, where they're separated, or we don't have a common cockloft to deal with like you do up there. So our exposures, we have a little bit of I guess a little bit of a leeway to an extent, to where you guys are chasing fire in a common space that stretches the entire block. So, I mean, that right there, you got to really be on your game even more so. But that's why this podcast exists, is that's very reminiscent of just about every main street, depending on where you're at in the United States, right? Old strip of buildings, common cockloft, stretching from one end of the block to the other. So it's kind of where all this ties in together. So, like, is there anything specific that you, especially since you have a pedigree from a truck company, when y'all got on scene, say one's going, you're looking at 3 about to be going, and that's about to be 5. Like, is there anything right away that y'all would go to? Being a truck company, did y'all go to the roof first? Were y'all going to the downward, windward? You know, was there anything? Did y'all help with the hand line? Or, I mean,
so, everything's situational. Like I said, we're right in that weird spot where we get, in theory, we get a lot of help up front, but, you know, you seem to run out of help and hurry at every real fire, right? You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's the old one has the gun. Obviously, search is still number one, but it's that balance of, like, so the truck I was on was in a weird spot that if we went west, we were the only ones there who would search because mm-hmm. the rescue was really far away
sure.
for a while. If we were going down towards the rescue and we all showed up at the same time, mm-hmm. then we, in that situation, yeah, probably like with the situation you described where it's, you know, going to be three or four buildings in a hurry, we'd probably get right to the roof. Okay. But it just kind of balanced that out. But as far as, you know, with the exposure thing, yeah, trying to get to the roof right away and figure out our plan of attack. Again, not having, you know, three dudes a rig, including the boss total, mm-hmm. Everybody's working. You know what I mean? There sure. is no, like the old, you know, the boss is here to supervise.
Right.
You know, the other odd thing we have is, and I don't know, it seems even just the local cities, we have a ton more of it in Albany than the other two cities. So I don't know how they managed to do this. Overhead wires, some blocks are just a rat's nest, man. Like there's absolutely no stick shot at all. So then it's trying to figure out how can we get a ground ladder to the right spot and sure. all that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the good thing about having a row at least is you want one roof is every roof, right? So,
absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
That is the saving grace with that. So, but, I mean, you do lose a lot of, you know, 360s are a pain. There's a lot that goes into rows. But so now coming from the perspective of non-attached exposures, you know, like we all have Sean Donovan stories. Boston's a big deal with their exposures.
Well, Sean Donovan stories, they want to have
So that's the situation. Is there anything like how would that change up with how you're on the downwind side of it or whatever? I mean, do y'all initially go straight up, start pulling the curtains, pulling the back baseboards? You know, you guys thermal imager camera, okay. strong game with that? Or, I mean, are y'all stretching a hand line with a hand line? Like,
so on the trucks, we're generally not getting involved in the water thing unless it's going to be the ladder pipe and doing that stuff.
Okay.
We try to keep our hands off because there's plenty of people that can do that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Not everybody's showing up with saws and hooks. So, yeah, again, it's the old it depends, which I hate, but unfortunately the way our place is set up, a lot of things are it depends. Mm-hmm. But for the non-attached exposures, making sure that we're out of the way. So because generally for those, we're not going to go right to the ladder pipe, right? So making sure that they can get the line in the gangway and do what they got to do. Cause that's going to be, again, if water's on it, that's the biggest thing. And then from the truck perspective, just trying to get, inside in the exposure and see what's going on without making it worse. So yeah, you know, shut windows if they're open, maybe open up a closet, try to take a peek in the closet. You know, is it inside or not? You know, if it's inside, okay, well, then shut the closet door, call for a line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that spot of, like, we try not to get involved in the water stuff. Sure. I can think of a few fires where we called for a line and the chief was, well, you better come out and get it because there's nobody left. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, right.
Well, yeah, we put the second in, but by the time they get here, you know, it's going to be too late. So if you need that line that bad, you better, you know, make yourself an engine. So it's that, I'd say that is the go-to thing from the truck perspective. And now being an engine guy, like I don't really understand how this whole engine thing works. I'm pretty sure it's water in, magic in the middle, water out. I don't know what that thing you know the truck does, but here we are. It's just knowing off the rip, like our, you know, we're going to all 750 gallon tanks now. Our new rig has one getting there, or the whole fleet should have them shortly. You know, punch it in the face right away. We're not going to fuck around, right? What do we have to do to get water on it? Is it going to be a 2.5? Is it going to be a deck on, right? Like, and there's that varying stage where, you know, the old school guys had a thing of, you know, if you're the first ones there, you don't pass a hydrant right away.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm kind of the thought of, hey, we got 750 gallons. If we aim the deck gun before we charge it and get it all where we want it and that knocks it down, that's a home run. You know, so it's just kind of that thing from the engine perspective is what can we do right now to make this better? It's going to be, you know, if it's 2 on arrival and it's 2 when we leave, that's a win.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, then you fall into the million-dollar question, you know, what water on the fire or water on the exposure? You know, you only have X amount of time. You know, like,
what'll column A, what'll column B?
Yeah. Know? So, right. I mean, so there's always that great debate, but I mean, like I said, everything's kind of situational dependent. But so, like, specifically talking about, like, on exposure protection from the inside, are y'all allowed to stretch, like booster lines, like a booster reel,
We don't have those, because if we did, we'd use them for everything and get up, and they'd just be the first 10 minutes of that. So sure. Took them away a long time ago, probably for the right reason.
So I know that's highly looked down upon, but in that situation, you got to understand it's not an inside fire, right? So like that is a very highly mobile, very quickly deployable line that in my opinion is great for just small time exposure protection, especially if you have like in our cases, we have 2.5-3 floors we're dealing with, right? So maybe you don't have the manpower to stretch 2 or 3 inch and 3/4 lines, you know, but there's a booster reel just sitting right there that one person can run up, you know, onto the second you know, floor super quick by themselves. So we don't have to worry about flicking anything out, right?
Right. So. Listen, I get that, and we had him, it'd even be a thing, but unfortunately we don't have him. But knowing how firemen are, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It'd be used right one time out of 20. I was saying the other day, if we ever brought him back, they should make it like 42.5 feet, so it wasn't long enough to get
to the
so
yeah, to get like, in trouble.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Just enough for a dumpster fire and a car fire. But yeah, we don't have him, so if we're stretching a line, the smallest thing we have is an 1.75 inch, so that's what we're
directing. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. So now, so when you're doing your exposures, are you guys typically doing like 2 lines, 3 lines in? Is it one line having a leapfrog floors? You know, that kind of sucks.
To start, I would say it's the line where it's needed based on what's found.
Sure.
I would think most companies at this point are checking the top floor first because of the cockloft thing for an exposure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously based on where it's coming across, but just because we have such bad luck with the cockloft, starting there and working our way down. You know sure. what I mean? But I would say initially the line's going where it's most needed, and then as people start to show up, you know, we can get them in place.
Yeah, that's good. I know you brought up looking in closets, man. That's a huge, huge tip that a lot of people don't realize especially when you're going with a thermal imager camera. Man, you have got to open up the doors and look in the backs of closets. Move the clothes out of the way and get a read on the actual wall closest to the exterior. Because a lot of these second floors are framed out.
Yeah, I'm not taking credit for coming up with that. I heard that or read that somewhere else from somebody. I'm not the guy who thought of that. I'm not that smart.
So I mean, we learned it. I'm telling you, man, I was in an exposure. We were in an exposure, checked it 3 or 4, maybe 5 times over the period of an hour, and it wound up being we were letting the family back in this place, and it wound up eventually chasing us out of the top floor. And that was probably the reason why we didn't catch it, is because we didn't check the backs of closets. We would have seen the fire building in the knee wall there that had been framed out. You know, so I mean, just the space, we never caught the fire. We were in it. I mean, it wasn't a smoke condition. The lights were on. It was crystal clear, and it got bad real quick. You know, I mean, it was literally we were letting the family back in the front door, and we were like, "Hey, that's still on fire." So,
these things happen.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that right there was, you know, the chief reminded us of that. We needed that's kind of stuff that you really, you know, you learn the hard way. So. Yeah. Plus, it comes back to the, you know, a lot of people don't, in my opinion, there's a fine line between too much damage and then, you know, being overzealous with your overhaul and stuff. But then again, when you don't do enough damage, then we get what we got there and we burn the roof off a house because we didn't want to put in a hole the size of a fist in the back of a closet, right?
So, yeah, exactly. And I think that, at least in our case, that comes down to letting one company handle it and not 3 companies.
Because sure.
You know what? You can control a couple guys, but when you get half the first arm and they're trying to help, they're helping isn't helping. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. I mean, I mean, the thermal imager cameras, for all they're good for, man, there's just a lot of stuff that they let you down on. You know, I mean, maybe that's the time to kind of bust out some old school stuff, take the gloves off the hands, kind of feel around on some walls and stuff, you know.
But, yeah, absolutely. It's all balance.
Right.
So kind of rolling off of his discussion with the closets and missing those, what is the biggest mistake you've seen made with exposure buildings?
Let's see here. I would say, again, just that knowing that we have to get in and thoroughly check, right? And then don't make holes in it until we have water. I think that gets, and that's just not in my place. I think that's everywhere. If you watch, you know, watch a fire from anywhere, you can tell when it's like, well, that was opened up a little early. that's kind of universal, right? It's right. The overzealous smashing, right? We got to balance that out of, you know, be ready, but get that one in there first. I'd say that's a universally, you know, it's all of a sudden we sent you in there to check it out and see how it goes. And now we have more of a headache because of what you did. You know what sure. I mean? That's probably the biggest takeaway.
What's the biggest hazard with exposure fires?
probably for us, not having a ton of help off the rip is getting one company in there, and then all of a sudden, you know, three or four dudes are either outgunned or, like, you know, Chris said, you know, crowd surfing down the stairs, because, you know, there's just either too many people or not enough, right? That balance of having enough people to do the work, but not so many people where it's like, yo, we got to get out of here right now and you're in my way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the big thing with exposures is just how fast the conditions can deteriorate from literally crystal clear. The lights are on in this place. You got a fire behind the walls. You have no idea it's even there. And then all of a sudden, like you said, like one bad hole's poked or something burns through somewhere. And you don't even have time to put your face piece on. It's almost like opening up the freaking elevator door to the fire floor on accident, you know?
Right. Like, and there's no putting it back. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's,
Go back where you came from, fella.
I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I've seen that happen so many times. People are just scampering into other rooms to try to get their face pieces. And then the line's not even anywhere up there because we weren't even expecting to need a line. You know, so
exactly. And I can think of one we were in, and same thing. It was three of us. I was a fireman. Three of us in the truck, in the whole place by ourselves, being a truck and half an engine because there was nobody left. And we went up in the attic, and I went up ahead of the guy with the nozzle just to see what was going on, and got like three quarters of the way up the stairs, and was like, I have the hot brain. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is not going well.
Yeah.
So I was, knew there was a window, trying to get to the window, and he's like, you want me to open the line? It's like, yeah, do something. This is like, just make water. You know what I mean? This is not great.
Right.
That's another
point you bring is in an exposure building, the fire is almost always, if not always, a concealed space fire, right? So even if you have a line, like, it really don't help to just spray water. That's the one time where, like, you got to really know where the water needs to go. You know,
we knew where the fire was right. coming from. If it was like, all right, well, yeah. It's on the side. Great. Well, I'll water that way. And hopefully
sure.
We can,
it's
some holes in something.
Right. I mean, it's just, I've had, you know, just nasty black smoke just blast out of attic scuttles, knee walls, you know, a room that was crystal clear 5 minutes prior. We walked back up, check the room one more time. And all of a sudden, you know, it's pitch black pressurized smoke blown out of this room now, you know. And none of us are ready for it. Like, that's happened so many times on these exposures. It's crazy. And, another is just the tactics that go into them. You got to be ready for them. A lot of times when we get caught off guard, it's not because, like, we're sitting there waiting with a hand line, like, holding the firewall or something. It's where we're like, oh, this place is good. It's been checked. And then it's not good. You know, the fire somehow snuck around us or something. We just didn't do a thorough investigation of it.
Right, exactly.
Other than that, like, do you guys teach your, I guess, you're in your fire academy on exposure protection, do you have anything, like, when we're assigned to exposure protection, since we're on a squad, we do get there kind of late, exposures are kind of what we always get assigned to, we have a, you know, we shut windows, right, pull curtains down, rip carpets from the baseboards if you have to, we'll take doors off hinges and put them in front of windows that are broken. That seems to actually be really effective. I've done that numerous times. It's actually highly effective. A lot of times, the main building will be fully involved, and a master stream will inadvertently hit the exposure building and break a window. So, you know, but whoopsies. So now you have actual flame, you know, from one exposure into another. And I'm putting a door over that broken window actually helps a lot. It's surprisingly effective. But like, other than that, did you guys do anything in particular with exposures that, you know, I didn't cover?
No, I think, you know, we're kind of on the same page with that as far as getting the basic education to guys initially. And then it's just learning, you know, like I said, learning the hard way is what teaches at the best, unfortunately, you know.
Can you talk a little bit about the roof ops that you guys do? I know you're on an engine now, but you have the truck experience, especially like in those connected row buildings with the cockloft. What are you guys doing when you go up there?
Absolutely. So again, knowing that initially, you know, if it's however many on arrival and the goal is to keep to that, I would say, and this is going to be with someone on the internet's going to say I'm wrong. And yeah, you're probably right because words are hard. So obviously we want to get our initial hole, right? And then some type of a defensive cut. I think it's called a strip cut, right? Because a true trench cut involves a hand line and all that stuff on the
right.
Roof.
Yep.
We're definitely not doing that. So a strip cut, right? But basically, and this, I think, takes a little bit of coordination almost to sell it, because it's not an everyday thing for us. It's not even an every row house fire for us. Mm-hmm. If somebody can sell it to the chief or somebody's, you know, high up to go, hey, what we need up here is a couple companies and a couple saws, and try to get that wall to wall cut, you know, one building, maybe write one building off. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that sales pitch of like, hey, listen, we're at two, it's going to be three, but let us cut it at four and then we're good. Sure. But try to get that, you know, that typical like strip cut, right? Well, you know, wall to wall, about 3 feet apart, and just open it up and basically make that fire break.
I think we're in the same boat with that with y'all. Just it's more of a time constraint why we don't do it as much. And what people don't realize is the older the buildings, the thicker these roofs are. You know, I mean, we're not LA up there, you know, signing our name with a chainsaw in half inch, right? Like that don't exist. I mean, either does 8 foot gutter lines where we work, right? Everything is a 35 foot ladder to the roof or an aerial. And then we're cutting 4 inches of tar, then one buys for decking, right? So, and none of that is quick. So,
and we're predominantly running chainsaws, like the Venmaster bar with the typical chain. And they get angry. You know, they get angry. They don't like tar. They don't like anything we use, but somehow they're a fire service saw. I have absolutely no idea how that works. On the rig I was on, they have a couple extra saws. I just have it shaped out. We managed to get them to buy us the 32 blades from Firehawks. And that thing, those two saws that have been great. We've used those a bunch, and they're just resilient. They throw a ton of debris, and they're really unforgiving, you know what I mean, compared to a chainsaw.
Yeah.
But you can't really stop the thing. It doesn't clog. It doesn't break.
Sure.
So we've had the luxury of doing that. And then recently we've had the luxury of having a couple big apartment buildings to train on and just get the guys up to speed on basic, you know, cutting your basic hole. So, I mean, in all reality, a lot of times for guys, when they cut a hole to fire, it might be the first time using the saw for real, not on a piece of plywood. It's like, it's a good learning environment, but like, it's that balance of, hey, I got to cut this hole and you can cut the next one versus we got to, like, you can do the whole thing.
Sure.
Recently, we've had the ability to get a couple big vacants and get a lot of the job through to do that stuff and use the different saws. Mm-hmm. So that helps, you know, just getting that foundation education down with the equipment.
That's awesome. So I guess that kind of ties in the next question. What do you guys do for more focused on building construction than exposures, but for your new guys and continuing ed, sounds like you guys go out into buildings when you can. And it's not just like the typical book lecture, you're doing some hands-on stuff too.
Yeah, so I can't speak for every fire academy class because we have different people run them, so I don't know what everyone's doing. I know everyone obviously is getting the stuff we use, if they're just like most of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, we have a guy, he's a battalion chief now, Pat Hines, who's like the building construction guy, super into it, both on the building construction side and the collapse side. He teaches all over the country for that stuff. So he's a real win and a resource that we have, that he gets to get in with the guys and do some things. And the couple of academies I've been involved in, we try to bring the guys out. Like, we narrow down the IFSTA stuff for like half a day and then do maybe a day's worth of a field trip just around town to the different neighborhoods. You know what I mean? What's better than looking at it? You know what I mean? We can at least show them the outside, and occasionally we can get them inside. We have a few relationships with people for the fire academy stuff, and get them in and show them stuff. You know, just because a lot of these guys, you know, aren't from town, didn't grow up in town, and they don't live here now, and that's fine. I mean, I get it, but we got to show them more than the suburban ranch they grew up in. So it's easier just to walk them around than try to show them pictures.
Sure.
You know, from the continuing ed side, from the guys in the company, you know, like I said, now with the two young guys I have, you know, we do a gazillion medical calls every day. And the upside of that is we're in these places. So once we're done EMSing, we can kind of, you know, take a stroll and that stuff. And then like with the truck, there was a couple spots that were always good for throwing the stick and building construction all in one. Mm-hmm. And one of them was the bodega. So the guy who owned the bodega owned the building. The deal was we kind of went in and bought some Gatorades and some Snickers bars, and he didn't mind if we stick his roof, you know, a couple times a year.
That's
so
cool.
He's just knowing the ins and outs of the game.
Right, for sure. Is there like a book or any kind of reference material you've ever utilized to educate yourself on these buildings? I'm talking kind of outside of the typical construction buildings everyone talks about, but is there anything for like exposure tactics or roof ops and that kind of stuff that you've used in the past?
Yeah, obviously all the common stuff, right? You know, the branding and stuff and the Vincent Dunn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, a couple of years ago, somewhere in line, somebody had put up that James Briarwood book from, like, what, 1800s? A long time ago. I forget the exact year, but I think it was before the 1900s. He was from England. Mm-hmm. But even that, he had some stuff that you could pull from it that was, like, you know, applicable. And then just the everyday, you know, the everyday books are huge. And then I'd say the biggest thing has probably been listening to people from other places, right? Because as much as we're all different, we're all the same. So learning how, you know, you guys do stuff, or they do stuff in, you know, Minnesota, or how they do stuff in Boston, right? Or, you know, even, you know, a real small job like they have a rock shop, right? What's their take on it? And just kind of getting everybody's pieces and put them together.
Right. Yeah, I think the big thing with exposure is, especially if you, you know, you have three essentially going, you have one main fully involved building and two exposures, is trying to get ahead of it with your foreseeability, right? A lot of places I've noticed try to hold it with their initial response, was they just basically see what they see and don't think about these two buildings, or, you know, added together, the sum of is really probably two buildings of fire, you know? So you have one fully involved one, and then two other ones that are like a quarter involved. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's that old thing that's in like the John Norman book, right? You know, where's it now? Where's it going to be in 5 minutes?
Right.
You know, what do we have left? And you do all that math, and you check them out that you have more things, you know, more resources around than you do things that could be on fire. And I think for us, you know, that's, again, we're that weird size of, we're not so small where every time we have to call help from, you know, mutual aid. Mm-hmm. But we got to start, you know, we got to get help there earlier on, at least our own help, you know, transmit another alarm and have them hang out. Like,
right.
What's the work? You know, and this is only my opinion. So, you know, I'm obviously not a chief and don't make any decisions, and probably somewhere in the matrix, this isn't the right thing to say, but what's the worst that happened? We're going to miss another tow pane call because we had a couple more companies waiting down the block.
Right.
Like,
yeah, sure. Like, at least get them on the way or something, or maybe not even, you know, hit a full alarm. Maybe you can just call for an additional company or two.
For us, an additional alarm is two engines, another truck, and a medic rig.
Yeah.
But reality, that's, you know what I mean, a dozen guys. Like, just we'll take another dozen guys.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So wrapping things up here, I just have one more question for you. We kind of like to ask people this. Has a building ever caught you by surprise, in hindsight being, you know, what it is? Is there something that you can now say that you missed that would have changed the outcome?
I'm sure there is, because I'm, one, not good at any of this, and two, yeah, you know what I mean? Nobody's perfect, and I make mistakes all day long. I think the biggest thing, more than a specific building, is the assuming that they're all, like, you know, if we have a bunch of those 2.5-story wood frames with the peak roof, that they're all set up the same, and then you get in there and there's a little variance, but you know what, you would have picked it up if you got a peek around back, or mm-hmm. if, you know, you'd, that, you know, whatever the thing would be, you know, if you do something all the time, have a habit, right? The one time you cheat the system that you don't, like, now that being the engine boss, I try to get at least like three sides of it in, you know, just so we kind of know before we go inside where the line's going to go. Mm-hmm. You know, on the truck, try to take a peek, right? Whatever your system is, do the same thing every time. I think that's what catches us all the time, is as soon as you start to cheat it, that then all of a sudden there's going to be an inherent problem because you decided not to do the thing that day.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for, you know, giving us your time. Hopefully we get to see you soon. And we're glad that this episode was brought to you by New York Fire Camp. And hopefully.
Yeah, those guys are good. I'd like to remind everybody of one thing, and this has to make it in, that there are more airplanes in the ocean than submarines in the sky.
Fact. Absolutely. 100%.
I got it in before Sean Donovan. That's
not,
right.
Not fake news. So, Hardy, man, will you be safe? And we'll see you when we see you. And thanks again.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Thank you again for listening to another episode of Main Street Firefighting, a podcast on fire engineering. We hope it was worth your time. If you've had a fire in your area or have a topic you would like to discuss, please reach out. We'd love to have you. Until then, stay safe and have a great night.